With 26 supervisors present, we have a quorum. I will call us to order and ask that we join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome all to the May 17th, 2012 County Board of Supervisors meeting for La Crosse County. Under my report, I would just give a little bit of background on the appointments that are occasionally an agenda item for us as a body, and note that for the special committees and commissions and task forces, just wanted to tell you a little bit about the process that was used. That you may recall, when you filled out committee preference forms, on the back of that was a list of several of those special committees. That was the first piece of information that was used to help make committee or special committee assignments. I also am very appreciative to have enlisted the help of First Vice Chair Supervisor Hampson and Second Vice Chair Supervisor Ebert in giving their input into the appointments for those special committees. I also tried to take into account information that you provided on that preference form about your skills and abilities and background that may have some that you would bring to that assignment. I also tried to take into consideration the notion that I'm trying to spread the workload a little bit so that there aren't a small number of people carrying all of the workload. I did also try and take into consideration an eye towards some leadership development, or when you asked, there were, as you can imagine, a number of people who wanted to chair committees. More than just five people wanted to do that, for example. So if there was an opportunity to give an additional special committee or commission assignment, that might be a way for folks who had identified that they were willing to step into a leadership role, I tried to take that into account, and as best as possible to create as much representation on each of those commissions and committees where the county board makes those assignments, so that we have some gender balance, we have age balance, we have city county or city out county balance. Those kinds of things were also taken into account. And then when it comes to citizen members and the appointment of citizen members to commissions or committees and special committees, we do have a mechanism on the website right now that we're hopeful will be enhanced with the launch of the new website, where citizens can indicate their interest in, through an email to the chair's office, their interest in serving on a committee or commission. I would also note that there are some very thorough recruitment processes that happen for some of these. For example, Criminal Justice Management Council, several of you may have seen the letter, the guest view in the La Crosse Tribune this past Sunday, and the letter from a former member, Jeeva Thole, to the Criminal Justice Management Council. Judge Gonzalez's letter solicited specifically requests or letters of interest. That group actually goes through a pretty elaborate process of interviewing potential members and making a recommendation to the county board chair that then comes through to the full county board. So that's kind of at one end of the spectrum. Commission on Aging also, through their publication, their newspaper, solicits interest for citizen members on the Commission on Aging, and those letters are kept on file in the aging unit office, and we use those as a database, if you will, for making or for looking at appointments. Farmland Preservation Commission, we recently approached all the town board chairs and the town's association as a whole. So we have been working at getting the word out when there are vacancies for citizen spots on our commissions or appointments that need to be made. So I just want to give that as a little bit of background. Can we get better at it? Absolutely. Are we improving the process? We hope so. But I wanted, especially for new supervisors, to have a little bit of context to how the appointment process is working. Supervisor Richmond, you have a question or a comment?
Just a quick Just a quick comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. But the website that has the committee with the vacancies, and I had mentioned to you I had not seen any vacancies on any of those committees listed on the computer. So who is the responsible person to update that? If there are vacancies, how does the public or supervisors know that there are vacancies?
That's the responsibility of my office, of the administrative assistant. I would note that right now two factors are at play in the past couple of months. One is a medical leave, and that the website is under construction. So we have not spent a lot of time updating a website that's going to shift as of John Parshall is going to talk to us about this later.
So
but I think it's either June 1 or July 1 we're going to launch a new website. So it is very possible that for the past couple of months that has not been as up to date as it should have been. But that responsibility is in the administrative assistant for the county board chair's lap.
But there could be someone that takes that responsibility if that person is not at the moment.
Yes, and the clerk's office is also helping in that process, trying to keep it as current as possible. I'm sure that that's one of the places where it definitely can improve. But yes, as a normal course, it would be that position with the help of the county clerk's office.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or comments on appointments? Thank you. County Board picnic plans. I hope everybody had a chance to look at the memo that I sent about the conflict that we have with the August date. So this would be the meeting at which we should set either changing a time of the full county board meeting or establishing some other date that we may choose to if we are wanting to have a picnic. Nobody is making eye contact with me right now, so maybe nobody wants to have a picnic. Any preference? We have, I think, as I said in the memo, typically moved the August meeting time to 9 o'clock in the morning with the picnic following. And the room goes silent. No preference? No picnic? Picnic. When would you like to have the picnic? September? August, other than county board meeting date, I'm hearing. Weekday, weekend. This could be like setting committee meeting times. Supervisor Cruz? Will you use your...
Could we perhaps choose another Thursday if the one that we had chosen doesn't work?
So are you proposing a date?
I don't have a calendar, so no.
Supervisor Pedretti.
The other option would be to pick August 6th, which is our county board planning night, and do the planning a little bit earlier and have the picnic after, something like that.
These are excellent ideas. I was hoping that by putting this in the packet, we would come with specific ideas. Supervisor Plesha?
Yep.
Supervisor Ebert? Is bailing Supervisor Plesha out?
I would prefer that it be on the same, on a county board Thursday meeting. So I guess my choice would be September. Weather is still decent and all that. So I'd like to make a motion that it be done on the September meeting, the September 20th. The meeting time would be at 9 a.m. for the county board meeting, followed by the picnic at noon.
Supervisor Ebert moves to hold the county board meeting on September 20th at 9 o'clock in the morning. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Discussion on that motion. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I've always been consistent with my position on meeting times, and it may seem kind of trivial, but I believe that we should really try to be consistent with when we meet just because we want to make sure we're not, we don't want to confuse the public, and we want to make sure the public can attend our meetings. And I think that's why we kind of set the meeting times at 6 o'clock in the evening for all of our planning and county board meetings. So I guess I would prefer that we don't deviate from the 6 o'clock meeting time in the evening, because that's when we normally have our meetings. And I would prefer, I would assume, try to work around that. So thank you.
Other discussion on the motion to hold the September meeting at 9 o'clock? Supervisor Weers.
I would echo that same thing. It's, I could make a county board meeting at 6 o'clock at night, but I can't make it at 9 in the morning. And I don't think we should work around just me, but I think it's kind of unfair to ask people if they're on the agenda for that night to have to take off work or whatever. I do want to be part of a picnic, too, so I don't, but I can't take off a full day, and I don't think a lot of the public could either, so.
Other discussion? I am going to anticipate the need for a vote on the computer. So the motion is, unless there's no other discussion, to move the September 20th county board meeting time from 6 p.m. to 9 a.m. The underlying intent is that it would accommodate the picnic later on that day. So if you're in favor, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. When it comes up on the computer, Supervisor Weers.
Sorry, I just have to apologize for stating a problem and not any solution. I think if we did a picnic someday at like noon, some of us could sneak away for a while and then keep the do it a different day and then keep the board meeting the same day.
So you'll be, I'll be looking to you for a follow-up motion, depending on what happens with this one. Okay. So on the computer, the motion has failed on a vote of 12 in favor, 15 opposed. Supervisor Weers.
I like Friday picnics, so I would make a motion to have it leave the county board meeting for the 20th, and then maybe, like, I don't know, do people prefer August or September? August.
So what is the date you're proposing for a noon picnic?
The 17th.
Pardon?
Friday the 17th of August.
Friday, August 17th, starting at noon?
Yes.
For the county board picnic, is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Holtz. Discussion on Friday, August 17th at noon for a county board picnic. No discussion? Supervisor Burke.
I just want to make sure that then the food would be ready at noon. You know, sometimes it gets a little iffy as to when the food is ready.
I'm sure Supervisor Kyle, chair of the picnic committee, will make sure that we're, I think the holdup in the past has been that the meeting end time is indeterminate. So other discussion on Friday, August 17th, noon picnic, food ready to eat. Supervisor Gamroth.
Would it be possible to do it at 4 or 5 rather than noon? Are we still, would August meetings still be in the evening then? We wouldn't have a morning meeting?
This motion only establishes a time of noon on August 17th for the picnic. It leaves the August County Board meeting in the evening at 6 o'clock on, is it the 20th? 16th, sorry, August 16th.
So if we're switching it, would anybody be in favor of a later time?
So the motion is noon right now. Are you... Supervisor Richmond.
Well, it's going to be very difficult. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's going to be very difficult for staff to be there at noon and then rush back to work at 1 o'clock, correct? I mean, are they taking the afternoon off, Friday afternoon? And then determine the place hasn't been determined, has it? You know, I think you need to put consideration into that as well. You know, everybody going to drive out to Neshonic again? You know, it's like...
I think if we're able to arrive at a time tonight, a date and a time, that would be a huge accomplishment to get us.
I will amend it to say 4 o'clock.
So wait, I'm not sure Supervisor Richmond is done yet.
Oh, sorry.
Sure, that's fine.
3.
Holy guacamole. Supervisor Weers. So the motion right now is noon on Friday, August 17th, which would be the day after the 6 o'clock county board meeting on August 16th. Any more discussion on that? We're going to vote up and down on all these, so there's lots more fun in store, I'm sure. So on the computer, Friday, August 17th at noon, place to be determined by our friends on the picnic committee. So that motion has been approved, 17 in favor, 9 opposed. So we have a picnic date and time set. And the chair thanks Supervisor Kyle, who will keep us posted on additional details of location and menu and all kinds of good things, I'm sure. So August 17th at noon. Thank you, everyone. Supervisor conference reports and announcements. Supervisor Pedretti.
I would like to report on a trip I took to Washington, D.C. That's why I missed the April meeting. I was at a UW Extension conference. It was at the expense, not at the county expense, but at the expense of UW Extension Group. They do fundraisers. We went out to D.C. to learn what other states are doing in the Extension area and also to talk about funding. Obviously, funding is an issue. We met with our senators and congressmen to encourage them to continue the funding as is. For every dollar that the federal funds give us, we get $6 locally, and it is a... The UW Extension is a program that's been around now for 100 years. It is a very good program. So it was a very good conference, and I thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Pedretti. Other conference reports or meetings? Supervisor Holtz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to report that I attended a WCA district meeting held on April 26th at Black River Falls. We discussed the association's structure, services, and current issues. The most interesting discussion had to do with Act 10, the governor's budget, and the court decisions that were being have come down. I have a copy of the lawyer's recommended things we should and shouldn't do. In the meantime, I'll want to pass that up to the chair for Dave and for the county administrator. And I also have a PowerPoint that I asked him to forward to me, which I will email to all the board members. I mean, it's not the same as what he's discussing it, but you get an idea of what he was trying to say. The last thing we did is we reelected Del Twite, the Buffalo County chair, as our representative on the state board. He was running unopposed. And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Holtz, and thank you for attending that on behalf of La Crosse County. Any other conference reports or announcements? If not, county clerk's report. Ginny?
The procedure for absences, we just want to remind you, if you will not be at the planning meeting or this monthly board meeting, you need to call before the start of a meeting. If you have an appointment scheduled for the day, you're not sure if you'll be here or not, just call us ahead of time so you can be marked excused. If we don't hear you before the start of the meeting, you will be marked absent, and we cannot go back to change that. It's a lot of work to go back and change all the votes if you're marked absent and you didn't call ahead of time. So we want to remind you to call our office or send us an email. Even if you're not certain if you'll be, just say you might be a little late. Just give us a heads up so we can mark you excused. Otherwise, you will be absent on the roll call. The next thing we're going to talk about is travel expenses. We've made many updates to this, so we want to go over it with you. This is going to be this colorful packet that was placed on your desks. This is a procedure we're going to try to be more strict with to make sure everyone's following it so we have better control over our budget. The guidelines are only reasonable, necessary, and actual costs are going to be reimbursed. The traveler should exercise good judgment in incurring travel costs, and government discounts are available. They should be used. There's also the tax-exempt cards, which must be picked up in the county clerk's office, that you will need to pick up before you travel to make sure you're getting tax-exempt on the hotel rooms and on your meals. Some of the expectations, I'm not going to go over all of these. You can obviously read what you have here. You can ask us if you have questions. When using a private car instead of a rental car, the traveler is only going to be reimbursed up to the price of the cheaper option. So if you travel somewhere and it would have been cheaper for the county to pay for a rental car for you rather than paying you 55.5 cents a mile, we're only going to reimburse you the cost of a rental car. So keep that in mind. If you so choose to take your personal car, that's fine. You're not going to be reimbursed the 55.5 cents a mile if it was cheaper for the county to pay for a rental. So keep that in mind. We are encouraging you to use the Trip Optimizer to determine what the best method is. This will tell you what will be cheaper or what you will be reimbursed. Currently, this is only available on the county intranet. There is a computer in the locker room back there where you can get access to this. We are working with the IT department right now to try to get access for you at home so you don't always have to be here to check on this. Yes, please. So once you get to this intranet, you want to go to Forms, which is right over here. And then the Trip Optimizer is over here on your right-hand side. And there's just three quick little things right here. The total round-trip miles. If you've traveled to the same meeting spot every time, you know how many miles that are, type it in. If you're not sure, you can go to MapQuest. You'll know exactly how many miles. So if you say you're going to Madison for the day, it's 200 miles. You're only going to be there for one day. You can put in one day. And the number of people traveling, if it's going to be you, if someone's going to be traveling with you. This then automatically fills in and calculates it for you. If you drive your own car, you'll be reimbursed $111, roughly. It'll depend on the gas price. If you're going to take a rental car that the county will pay for, $67.90. So if you take your personal car, you're only going to be reimbursed at $67. Okay? So this will show you exactly what the best method is or what you're going to be reimbursed to go. From here, you can go to get your travel authorization form. You can fill this form out, your name, title, who's going with you, you're a county board member, the purpose, your destination. This all needs to be filled out completely and turned into the county board chair's office to get approval for going to this conference or meeting. You can, Supervisor Schrader? Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you use your microphone, please? Thank you.
Thank you. Where do you get reimbursed for your fuel use if you use a rental car?
We'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Always one step ahead.
And then on here it'll tell you that it's recommending you to use the rental car. If you take your own, fine. You're only going to be reimbursed the $67. And then you'll want to print this off, turn it in for the board chair to approve. The next thing you need is your statement of travel expense form. And this is the form that you turn into my office to be reimbursed for your miles. A lot of you use this already for your monthly meetings. You need to fill in the date, where you went, why you went there, where you went from, so if it was West Salem to Madison. The time you left, the time you returned is very important. and then the miles. If this was overnight, on this form right here, you can put what you spend for meals, and you'll be reimbursed. If it was a non-overnight stay, the meals need to go on a separate form because we'll have to take taxes out on that. And that's all I need you to fill out on here. I will add the miles up, and I will do all this other stuff for you because a lot of times there's going to be changes. So we'll fill in the rest for you. Okay, I just wanted to give you a brief run through on that. If you have questions or the first time you're using it, feel free to stop in my office. We'll walk you through it. Yep. Mileage reimbursement, you're only going to be reimbursed the IRS mileage rate. Currently, it's 55.5 cents. One change that's going to happen is if in-county mileage will only be approved for travel to and from committee meetings that the supervisor is appointed to. So if you decide to attend meetings that you're not appointed to as a supervisor, you may not be reimbursed for those. If you're traveling to Madison and several of you are going to the same meeting, we're asking that you carpool. You also have to register for these meetings in the county board chair's office by the deadline to attend those events. If you're past the deadline, you may not be approved to travel for these meetings or conferences. And then the other new one that we want to bring to your attention is all expenses must be submitted within 60 days to the county clerk's office. The reason we're doing this is we have no control of the budget if everyone turns their expenses in at the end of the year like several people do now. So within 60 days, it allows us to have better control of the budget. It also gives me better control of the mileage. Throughout the year, the IRS mileage rate can change. So if you turn it at the end of the year, I have to go back, figure out what the gas price was when you traveled in March, and what the IRS mileage rate was. So if we're doing this monthly or within a couple months, it's easier for us to figure this out. Under the expense form, again, your departure times need to be placed there. The agendas for where you're going, what you're attending, need to be attached to the expense form. The trip optimizer that you're going to print out should be attached as well. And then employees that claim mileage reimbursement must have a certificate of insurance on file in the county clerk's office. If you do not have a current one on file, you will not be reimbursed for mileage. And unfortunately, I don't have a lot of spare time to be calling separate insurance agents asking for declaration of insurance cards. So if you're renewing your insurance, it's a good time to have them fax us a declaration of your insurance so we have it on file. Otherwise, we won't be reimbursing you for your mileage. Meal expenses will only be paid for meals purchased outside the county. So if you're attending a meeting within the county, you buy yourself lunch, we're not going to be reimbursing you for that. Another change is if you do stop for meals and you're outside the county, you need to bring us an itemized receipt back. In the past, if you said you got breakfast, you were just automatically given $8. For lunch, it was $9. For dinner, it was $17. Now we're going to require an itemized receipt, so you'll be reimbursed exactly what you paid. Make sure you use your tax-exempt card to make it tax-exempt. If you go to a conference and meals are included at any part of that conference, you will not be reimbursed for the meal if you decide not to do the conference meal if you go outside of that. The next sheet. We've hit all that stuff. The only other thing I want to touch on is if you're traveling, we're going to highly encourage sharing hotel rooms. That is something that's in the ordinance now, so we're going to request that if there's two of you are going, you'll be sharing hotel rooms. And that lodging expenses will not be reimbursed for the night prior to a meeting if you can leave by 6:30 a.m. and get there in time for the meeting. So if there's a conference in the Dells that starts on Monday at 9 a.m., we're not going to pay your hotel room to go Sunday night. You can leave at 6:30 and get there in plenty of time for the meeting. We made a very nice, the next sheets, this goldenrod yellow sheet. It's a check-off list. You can go right down this list of everything you need to know. It spells it all out for you. We attached a copy of the travel authorization forms. These forms are also in the front of the room here every meeting. There's the authorization form, the mileage expense form, and then a non-overnight meal form. And that's just what the next three forms are. Again, we'll work with you on this. I know there's a lot of new changes. If you have questions, you can stop in our office, and we'll be more than willing to help you as much as we can on them.
Any questions right now? Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is very helpful, Ginny. Thank you very much, especially for the checklist. I have one question, though, on the first page, under expectations, bullet point number 4, in-county mileage will only be approved for travel to and from committee meetings the supervisor is appointed to. I'm pretty sure we passed an ordinance or something that said if it's relevant to your work as a supervisor that you will get mileage paid to it. That's been my understanding. Is that wrong?
Well, I think it's a question of definition of what's relevant to your work. And, I mean, we were trying to come up with a definition that we all understood. I'm not sure what relevant to your work means. So.
Oh, okay. I'll try to go back in history and find notes or something on that board meeting. But
I thought it was much broader than this. Yeah.
Okay. I'll check on it. Thanks.
Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you very much. I also have a question with these expectations. I've been in the situation, I think twice before, where I needed to be someplace on Monday morning very early, which would have meant that the rental car would have need to have been secured like Friday or something like that, in which case the price would have been much, much higher than taking my own car. So how does that work? How is that resolved, please?
Through Enterprise, if you have to leave Monday, they're only open till noon on Saturday, so you'd have to pick up the car by noon on Saturday. They charge us a $15 flat fee for Sunday, and then Monday on we'll go to the regular rate. So it's a $15 additional charge.
So wouldn't that mean then that we would have to leave our own car at Enterprise on the Saturday and use their car all weekend?
Or arrange somehow to pick up that car, yeah. That's probably not calculated. It's calculated in my formula. They close at noon, so if we're using Enterprise, you have to find a way to pick up the car early.
So if we use that rental car then on Sunday, because that's the only vehicle we have, and something happens, we're using it on our own personal time for our own personal reasons, but we don't have any other vehicle, and there's an accident, what happens then? Is the county going to be responsible still?
That sounds like an excellent question for our corp counsel.
Asked by another attorney. Let me make this suggestion. Let's keep asking these questions, and we will try and get answers and bring them back to the planning meeting next month, so we're not taking up too much time tonight to try and scramble for answers. Was that it for you, Supervisor Friedland? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. You said that if there are more than one of us going someplace, we should carpool. And does that mean that, like, I would have a van that could haul six people, I would still have to get a rental car? Would I be reimbursed for the use of my vehicle, or would I have to get a rental car to go someplace?
If your vehicle holds six people and you drive, you'll be reimbursed the cheaper of a rental car or the mileage at 55.5 cents a mile.
Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. I was just wondering, when you had $67 for rental to go to Madison and back, and then you have to top it off with gas, and let's just say gas is down to $3 a gallon, how many gallons of gas is that going to burn, and is this going to be cheaper than using the 55 cents straight through?
If you take a rental car, you have to fill it up.
Correct.
Wherever, half a tank, full tank, wherever. You turn in the receipt for the gas, you will be reimbursed for the full cost of the gas.
How does that figure out when your mileage? Say you've got 20 miles a gallon and you went 200 miles, that's $10 a gas. At $3, that'd be $60, plus the $67 is more than the $110 that you would pay me if I took my own vehicle. So which one is the way to go?
It's a very complicated format to figure out. The finance department has that built into the optimizer. It figures out the mileage, the gas, the price according to what it was federally at that beginning of that month. It figures out what's the cheaper option to go. That's what the trip optimizer is for.
And do I get a paid mileage to go to drive down to the airport to Enterprise to pick the car up from
Enterprise
my house?
Is actually right downtown on
right.
3rd Street.
But that's 22 miles from
but yes,
Stevenstown.
You do. You do.
So you would pay me for going from La Crosse, from Stevenstown to La Crosse mm-hmm. and back. That'd be 44 miles. You'd pay me 55 cents for that. Plus, you would pay $67 for the car and approximately...
You're an exception to the rule, and I have a whole new formula I use for figuring out what we're going to pay you.
Other questions? Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that, if I take the liberty, I think Mr. Schrader was talking about what the lowest price up there was $67 for a vehicle for Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But what if six people were going, and could you upgrade to a van? It's not the lowest vehicle available, but you're going to carpool with six people.
Oh, wrong mouse.
Yeah, so if you went to a minivan
at 85. So if you upgraded to a minivan,
yeah,
then that would still be the cheaper option. So if you upgrade to a minivan, that's what the county would pay for if that's what's needed to travel with the six people in one vehicle.
Okay, thank you.
Is that was your question?
Okay. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add that Enterprise is very helpful and will work with you to make it as easy as possible for you to use their rental cars. They're very good.
Yes.
That's all. Thanks.
Any other questions on the travel and expense guidelines? I would just reinforce what the clerk said at the beginning, that this is following the ordinance, and we met with the auditors this week about, you know, making sure we have checks and balances in place to keep control over costs and expenses, and this is our responsibility as supervisors to make sure that we're following the ordinance. And the clerk, along with folks in the finance staff and up in our office, have worked very hard to make it as easy as possible and put these documents together. So I would encourage you to look through them again, and if you have more questions, we have the one from Supervisor Friedland that still needs to be resolved. If you have others, if you could direct them either to the clerk or to me, we can try and get them answered in advance of next month's meeting. Okay? Thank you. Back to you.
The next thing on the agenda is committee minutes. When you get your packet each month, you sign up for what minutes you want. If you want all the standing committees, if you want PRD, if you want certain ad hoc, if you want the county board minutes, all of these minutes are available online, and they're put out there rather quickly from when the meeting gets done. So I'm going to encourage you to only sign up for the minutes that you really, really need and that you don't have access to the internet to get. There's a lot of times at the end of these meetings I'm finding packets in the garbage with all the minutes there, and it's a costly to keep printing all these minutes out, 29 cents of 5, 6, 7 pages of these minutes. So, and I'm sure Supervisor Pedretti would, sustainability, would appreciate that as well. So we're going to pass around the committee sign-up form. Just mark down if you want the county board, if you want standing committees, if there's only certain committees you want. If throughout the year a topic comes up, like last year when the billboard signs and that came up, if you want minutes for certain meetings, just let us know. We can get them for that. You don't have to keep getting them every month. So we'll work with you. We'll let you know. Let us know what you want, and we will get it to you. So we're going to pass this around, so please sign up for what minutes you want. If there's a special ad hoc you want, just write it down on here. Otherwise, you'll receive all the ad hoc, and we'd rather not do that. Any questions on the minutes?
Great. Thank you, Jenny. Court counsel report, Dave Lang. A bit of background on closed session information, please.
Discussion about closed session. I'm going to make this brief. You heard me last time. I think I talked a little bit long, so I promise that this won't be longer than a half an hour. No, I promise it'll be short. I'll do it like I'm timed by Judge Mulroy at a at a jury argument where one time I thought he had said 10 minutes and he actually said 2 minutes. And when I got to the end of my closing argument and I just got started, he said, time's up. and I had to whip through it quick. So anyway, it reminds me of that. I'm just going to go through some of the main points. And I have before you, there was an outline in purple about closed session. And I just wanted to make sure that some of these, you knew about some of these points. So if you have that, the first point is procedure. Most of you know this. It has to be a motion that's made and carried by a majority vote. The presiding officer must announce to those present the statutory exemption, because there's specific exemptions going to closed session, and the nature of the business to be discussed. Don't just skim over it. Just say the statute section. Say what it is, because people or the press or people present need to know what it's about. And number three, only those matters announced may be discussed during the closed session. We'll talk about this for a minute, because sometimes this, what happens is you get in the closed session, people want to talk about anything they want. And that happens sometimes, and I've seen it sometimes. So what happens is you're supposed to talk about the reason you went into closed session, and you should do that. I mean, I remember one time, I think I was here at a closed session in the county board, and I think it was a past member, the late Janice Kyle, I think, mentioned to me, aren't we getting far afield from what we're supposed to be? And I, you know, said, yeah, we are. We're way off the topic. So that happens, and sometimes you're going to have to be ones monitoring yourselves if you're in a meeting of closed session and, you know, I'm not there, someone's not there, and remember that we got to be talking about why we're in closed session. If it's something that should be discussed in open session, it should be discussed in open session. So the closed session is fairly narrow. So talk about the reasons you went into closed session when you're in closed session, and if it's matters more for open session, should be left for that. Attendance. Usually non-members are not brought into closed session, but any committee or a board, you can bring members in who are not members of your committee, because if you need information to be brought into closed session, you can do that. Exclusion of members. No member of this body can be excluded from any meeting of the body. Even if that person has a conflict, you can't say you can't be here. That's their choice. We can tell them you shouldn't be there. I can advise them you shouldn't be a member, you shouldn't be attending, but we can't exclude a member from coming. And the third is exclusion of members on committees. No member of this body, for instance, the county board, can be excluded from any meeting of a committee of this body. So any of the standing committees, if you have a meeting or even a closed session meeting, any of you can attend. You cannot be excluded from any meeting of any of the standing committees of this body. Any member can attend, whether it's a closed or open session. One of the reasons I was asked to give this brief talk is about access to information. I believe maybe Supervisor Ebert raised a question. What about disclosure by members? What about disclosure of what's talked about in open session? The open meetings law doesn't address it, but obviously there's a reason you go into closed session, and that's to keep it confidential. You don't want this getting out to the public. There are reasons that it's discussed in closed session, that it's kept confidential. So normal rule is you do not disclose information obtained in closed session with non-members. That would defeat the purpose. Can you discuss information with other members of the body? Let's say you have a closed session of a committee and there's other members of the body that you want to know what happened. Yes, you can do that, especially since any member of this body can attend the closed session. But my caution would be to inform people, if you do talk to them about what happened in the closed session, don't re-release this. Don't talk about this further. It's not for public knowledge, because matters have a way of just getting out to the public that shouldn't be, often when they're discussed in closed sessions. So we should bear that in mind. What about access to documents? Again, we don't have anything provided in the statutes, but I would indicate that I think documents provided in closed session should not be disclosed to anyone not present at the closed session. You can, but my advice to you would be don't do it, because there's a way that documents are easily copied and suddenly they're gone. As a matter of fact, often if it's very sensitive material and we're in closed session, I'll say, let's collect the documents, because we don't want them. We don't want those documents getting out. They might have very sensitive information. They might have trade secrets. They might have confidential medical information. So be very careful with documents. My general rule of thumb would be just don't make copies. Don't disclose them again. Again, later on, documents that may have been confidential at one point later on, if the passage of time, will be subject to the open records law. So what's confidential at one point won't be at a later point, like a contract negotiation that's completed. You know, what's confidential at one point might not be 2 months later. So They're still open to the open records law, and if there's questions about disclosure, they should be brought to our attention. Voting in closed session, Department of Justice advises governmental bodies to vote in open session, not in closed session, unless by doing so you would compromise the need for a closed session. I can't think of a reason right now, but I think a long time ago I remember one time when the vote was in a closed session because if you had the vote in open, it would basically defeat the purpose for the closed session. But so the normal rule is you vote in open session. Reconvening an open session after a closed session, you cannot reconvene an open session within 12 hours unless the notice states, the notice actually states that you will be reconvening an open session either to announce the result of the action taken or for taking further action. So that's why the notices always say that. If it doesn't, you can't go back into open session. That's it. Any questions?
Supervisor Spiker.
How about keeping the minutes in closed session? Could you explain a little bit about that?
Normally, I didn't address that, and I'll look into that, Chuck. I think normally I don't think that we do. I'll look into that. I didn't look into that.
Some units of government do have minutes, and then when they can release them, whenever the subject matter is resolved, then they release what was happening in closed session.
Yeah, but because you wouldn't want them. I mean, if you do keep minutes.
No, I understand that, yeah. But at some time they have to be released to the public because you've solved the problem. You used the closed session, but the public has a right to know what went on and who voted. I mean, you can vote in closed session, though, correct?
Yeah. Well, that's why normally
they advise you not to.
Right,
but you
right.
Can.
Right, you can, but the normal rule is don't vote in open session, so it is part of the minutes.
But can you check on that about minutes?
I can check on that.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or comments? Thank you, Dave.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. And we especially appreciate your brevity. The judges would be proud of you as well. Administrator O'Malley.
Yes, generally we do proclamations at the first meeting of the month, but to save voting requirements, since we are off-site, we're doing our proclamations this evening. Proclamation May 2012, Law Enforcement, Public Safety, and Courts Month. Whereas in a free society, law enforcement is entrusted and expected to protect the civil rights of its residents and visitors to our community. Whereas La Crosse County employees serve to enhance public safety in the courts, district attorney, sheriff, patrol, and jail, emergency management coordination, medical examiner, and public safety communications. And whereas thousands of residents and visitors are helped each year by the professionals who respond to emergencies and assist those in need. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of May as Law Enforcement, Public Safety, and Courts Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring the safety of its county's residents and visitors to our community.
A motion to approve the proclamation by Supervisor Landre, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The proclamation is approved. With unanimous consent that we take item 529, which was the addendum, which is a second proclamation. Any objection to that? Go ahead, Mr. O'Malley.
Whereas La Crosse Joint Board of Harbor Commissioners, in conjunction with the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, are committed to promoting safe boating on the area's waterways in preparation for the 2012 boating season, and whereas knowledge and skills are important in creating awareness of the risks involved with water safety, causing citizens to likely take the precautionary measures to protect themselves and their friends and families, and whereas safety awareness campaigns have contributed to a substantial decrease in the number of boating fatalities per year in the U.S., 2004 having the lowest number of fatalities in the history of the statistics, and whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment and not by the boat equipment or environmental factors, and whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today had they worn their life jackets. Now, therefore, be it resolved, we, Matthias Harder, Mayor, City of La Crosse, and Tara Johnson, County Board Chair, do hereby support La Crosse County La Crosse Joint Board of Harbor Commissioners and the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary in their efforts to promote safety on the area's waterways and proclaim May 20th through 27th, 2012 as La Crosse Safe Boating Week and urge all those who boat to wear it and practice safe boating habits, dated the 17th day of May in the year 2012.
A motion to approve the proclamation by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Becker. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That proclamation is approved as well.
Madam Chair, members of the board, the last item that I have under my report is to actually ask John Parshall to come forward, our IT director, and discuss with you the upcoming improvements of the County Board website. While John's coming forward, I'll just remind you that we are looking for feedback on the evaluation about the County Board retreat. Even if you weren't able to attend, you will have received a handout. There were two supervisors that did attend that didn't turn them out. I do have blank copies for that. We would like your input so we make sure that the retreat is responsive to you. So if you did not turn one in, you did attend, I have extra copies. John, why don't you let the board members know what we're doing about the County Board website.
Okay, I will. Thanks. Right now we're working on the main page that you see on the website. So that's the County of La Crosse. The domain name is the co.la-cross.wi.us. And that website has been probably around for 10 years. It was here before I arrived, and I've been here for 7. So it's basically time it needs a facelift, and what we're doing, we've got a small steering committee group, which consists of the board chair, the county administrator, county clerk, and myself, and then a design team working on the changes, and they're busy working on fixing the links, changing some of the look and feel pictures, getting it up to modern times. Some of the neat things they're doing is we're putting a tool in place where we can organize the agendas and minutes better, give the committee recorders and the county clerk better access to get the minutes and agendas out there, as well as people coming in and finding events through a calendar feature. So we'll be implementing that in part of the process. Along with that, which I think came up a little earlier, we're busy changing the current, which actually is brought up there, the board profile pages, with the changes for the new supervisors coming in and the redistricting. That we'd like to have done by June 1st. I believe we had information in your packets that we need returned to us tonight. Is that correct? Getting that information back to us, and Jenny can collect those, would really help us hit that June 1st date, because we want to make those changes that are necessary for the county board profile site underneath the main site. The main site we would like to have done by the end of July. Sometime in June, we will start demoing and bringing other people involved to see the site before we launch it. But right now the goal is to have the main page done by the end of July, this page and all the updates done by June. And that information will allow us to start making those changes that are on those packets. We also are replacing equipment in the boardroom. We have two supervisors trying it out now. Robert Kyle is one of them, Karen Johnson, and then the board chair. If you notice, they tilt a little bit more, so they're out of the way. They have touch screen ability as well as the keyboard and mouse. Some interesting things about this, you may not know, but this equipment in here has been going for now, I think it's close to 10 years, and that's a really good thing with equipment life cycle. So we picked the equipment that we're trying out right now in the same regard that we think we're going to get another 10 years out of this. Again, the new equipment hasn't been mounted properly yet, so if you look down there and it looks like it's a little bit of a mess, that's just because we just put it in. We're going to get new mounts and things to put under there. So the people that are using it, I'm encouraged to use the touch features if you can. Feel free to continue to use the keyboard and the mouse. Anything that you want to give us feedback on, Jenny said she would collect that and get that back to us. So if you see problems or something you don't like or something you would like to have enhanced, feel free to just talk to her any of the meetings. We'll leave the demos in for a few months is my thought at this point. But just so you guys know, they're low cost, very energy efficient, very quiet, don't create heat, and we expect to get another long life cycle out of them. So that was some of our thinking and picking that. But at the same time, we wanted to get some new features.
You stated, thank you,
Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you. You stated low cost for replacement. What was that low cost dollar amount, please?
I don't have the exact, but it's pretty close, about $800 per unit.
Per unit?
Yeah.
And the usage really is quite low, being we have two meetings in here a month.
Yep.
So 10 years?
Yep.
It's not a lot of usage unless there's someone else using these.
Yeah, we do. We have some people that come in here and train. We have many meetings in here from departments. So it's not constantly used, but there's enough activity going on that they're used enough. But just from a standpoint of equipment we could have picked, typically right now, if you push other equipment, you're talking 6 years. If you're looking at tablets and other small devices, you're lucky if you get four out of them. That's how fast the technology's changing. So these we expect to get another long life cycle out of it. And that's a good thing if you're trying to do budgets. So other questions?
Any other questions for John? I would just reinforce, this room got used much more heavily in the first 10 years of the life cycle of those computers as a training room. It was used heavily. I think more of that training has decentralized now within the county, but it wasn't just us using these devices, especially in those early years. Other questions about the website? How's the touch screen working for you, Bob? Thank you. Anything else, John?
Yeah, I have just a couple other things. One is I just wanted to bring up the wireless access points in all conference rooms now is available for all county board supervisors. So if you bring in your personal wireless device, that ability is there and enabled today. I can't share the password and user ID with you right now, but I can leave it here with Jenny. You can ask for it, and you guys can start. You can call our help desk at 785-9601 anytime between 7:30 and 5. They can help you get your device set up. So if you're coming in and you want wireless access, it is available. And I'm 99% sure any conference room you hit in the campus area, you'll be able to get access to the internet. So it's just basic internet service. For your personal devices coming in your meetings. I believe there's a couple people using it already, and I believe it works good. It's semi-secure at this point. That's why we still have a password and user ID on it, but it only expires once a year, and we will email that when we change it January, and we'll also obviously let Jenny know about it so she can help communicate that too during the board meetings. So. And then they wanted me just to talk briefly about email and how we're doing it and a little bit about the proper use. Right now we govern our employees by four policies. We have an email policy, an internet policy, a network proper use policy, and a remote access policy. Now, while it sounds a lot, we've condensed all these down. There's many, many other policies we have, but these are the four that we actually keep people out of trouble and make sure they're using the equipment, using the internet, using email appropriately. We will be including that handouts in one of the future packets. You may see emails coming out that says you need to take the course. At this point, just ignore it. You'll get a packet, and all we're asking you is to read through it. I guess I'll let the board chair and the county administrator decide if we want you to sign off on it or just want you to read it. But the auditors is one thing. The auditors that we have come in that were mentioned earlier, it's the same thing. If we let people use county resources and come onto our network, we want to make sure they're using it appropriately, and we keep everybody out of trouble. Just a little bit focused on the email here. Right now, we allow supervisors to use personal emails, the county email, a combination of both. And I just like to touch on those combinations and let you know what we recommend and what you might want to think about if you don't use the county email system. So one option we set up, if you use the county email system, you get automatic backup and archiving for open records, which is a good thing. You get a higher level of filtering and spam protection. better security, and then you get an easier way to communicate with other county board supervisors and the county as a whole, because you're inside the email system, which includes all the email distribution lists and all the other things such as calendars, rooms, and things like that that are built into an email system. With that being said, we do have some using county, so this is option two. We have people on using personal county and county email as an archive option. So we have a few supervisors that like to use their personal email, because we understand you have other lives and other accounts and other things going on, and they will forward work email that they want archived to the county email system. Again, this activity that you do still requires you to come onto our system and do cleanup work, because once the email system fills up, since you're using your personal email, you won't realize that, and those emails will quit archiving. So if you chose that option, and I can help you with those options, you can just get to Jenny and I can get back to you. And if you're not sure, if you chose that option and you're using your personal email and you're trying to forward things back to us, realize you still have to come on and do cleanup work on our system. So if you take that option, that's something you need to be concerned with. And then again, if you just use personal email and no county at all, just realize your ISP or your email provider is not responsible for any retrieving and saving any of your emails. So if you get caught in a situation where you need to have those things retrieved, they will not help you. And plus, if you did try to save it yourself, you will probably get questioned, why are you pulling your own records when a records request happens? When it happens internally, we do that on behalf of the requester. From our systems, everything is time-stamped and organized appropriately. And then lastly, we have a fourth option, believe it or not. We have some people using county email and want us to forward on to their personal account. So basically, they must be in their personal accounts and want to know when they get an email. That's probably the best second option I would recommend if you have to have email. But then again, remember, when you're on your personal email account and you're responding and you're trying to do something, you still have to remember, oh, I better forward that on to my other account, or no, when I want to respond, I need to log back onto the county email system. It could get very confusing. So from my perspective, I recommend use the county email system, try to separate your county work from your personal life, and then I think things will be a lot easier for all. And I do realize, and we do try to do this, we will try to publish and organize your whatever email account you pick on the websites and on our distribution list. But remember, it gets confusing when you've got four different things going on here from, you know, 20-some different people. So, but
questions on email? Supervisor Veenstra.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I was wondering if it would be possible for you or somebody in the department to load up our contacts with every supervisor, department head, administrator, blah, 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 so we don't have to do it personally and take hours.
Blah,
and
blah,
hours.
Blah. Is that a legal term, Supervisor yes. Veenstra?
It's possible, but see, if you use our system, it's automatically going to be there for you. So there is no loading up. We have county, we will have county a supervisor distribution list, and if everybody comes aboard, it will be there for you to pick, fling, and use. And
it's not in our contacts, though.
It will be on the distribution list that you can pick. There's two types of distribution lists. There's your personal list, and then there's what we call the global list. The global, if you come on and use our system, you will see it in the global list, and you just have to pick it.
You're asking for that to happen on your personal device?
No, when you go to the county, when I go to my county email in Outlook, mm-hmm. There's nobody in my contacts.
But if you put county board,
yeah,
it should pop up.
I can show you that.
All right.
You have to switch from your personal to the global, and then it will come up if you search for it.
My bad. Thanks.
Sorry.
Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a suggestion. You said you were about going to be handing out a packet to all of us with the things that you've outlined here tonight. Did I hear you say that?
Yeah, I will hand out a packet, but it will be for really the proper use and training. It won't actually cover some of my points tonight.
Okay. Well, I was going to suggest, can you maybe send us that in email form rather than hard copy?
Sure.
Okay. And maybe give us a choice. Personally would prefer to have it as an email rather than a hard copy.
No, that's good. And just realize there's a few supervisors that don't have emails, right. So we'll have to still have some paper. So.
Any other questions of John? Is that it, John?
Yep.
Thank you very much. I hope supervisors agree. I know it's taken us quite a while to get through a lot of information, but it's important that everybody is on the same page, as we like to say these days, about these procedures that affect all of us. So thanks to staff for bringing us up to date on a number of items tonight. And with that, I will note that cards and correspondence are on the bulletin board in the back. And I will also ask the indulgence of the board that the photographer who's coming to take the picture may not want to wait until whatever time we finish tonight. So we may be calling for a recess to go and take that photo. Roger, I'm looking at you, Supervisor Plesha. They're not here yet, correct? So when the photographer arrives, we will find an opportune time to take a recess to go have the photo taken. And with that, I would ask Supervisor Hampson to take the chair for appointments, please.
Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move approval of the 12 appointments that are listed on the agenda and ask to retain the floor after the second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Johnson to approve all of the appointments, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. And back to you.
Thank you. I just wanted to note that for some of these appointments, there is not a date. This is consistent with the ordinances that govern these appointments. Some of them are very specific in the terms of service for a member of a committee or a commission or a council. Others do not have those terms specified. So that's, if it looks odd, that's why. We're following the ordinances, and some of them don't have specific terms to them.
Is there any further discussion on those appointments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously. Anything else for you?
That's all. Thank you.
All right.
Next up is the consent agenda item 515. Supervisor Plesha moves its approval, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Discussion on the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is, the consent agenda is approved. Supervisor Pedretti.
I would ask unanimous consent to move item number 5-23 up in the agenda to now. We have some folks who have been waiting patiently for this item.
Is there any objection to moving item 5-23 up to this point in the agenda? Seeing none, it is so ordered. Item 5-23, back to you, Supervisor Pedretti.
Conditional use permit number 855, filed by Jeffrey and Sharon Kramer to operate a pizza preparation food business within a portion of a proposed 36-foot by 55-foot pole shed and future home on a 54.46-acre parcel of land zoned Agricultural District A in the town of Shelby. There were 14 conditions, and it was a tie vote 3-3. I would move to disapprove the committee report and approve conditional use permit 855 with the 14 conditions and ask to retain the floor.
Supervisor Pedretti has moved denial of the committee report and instead approval of the conditional use permit requests. I'm going to rule that out of order and ask that we take this as two separate motions.
Okay.
This is a little confusing, but because it was a tie vote, it failed in committee, so the recommendation from the committee is to deny. Let's get that on the floor as a separate motion, and then depending on what happens with that, we can take up a motion to approve. So
my motion then is to
approve the committee report. Is that the motion?
Point of order.
The chair would like to entertain a motion.
Thank you.
To accept the committee report, which is to deny, and then if it is the wish of the group to ultimately approve the conditional use permit, that would be a secondary motion. So the committee report is what should be moved coming out of PR&D committee.
Thank you for helping me. We've not had a 3-3 tie before, so this is new to me, and I'm trying to get it right, so thank you.
Okay, let's hold on for 1 second. Do you have a point of information, Supervisor Geary?
Yes. I think someone that voted to deny should put it on the floor. I don't think Supervisor Pedretti, who voted to approve it, should put it on the floor, because normally the person that moves to approve supports the motion. So one of the three that were in the majority, even though it was a tie, that was the majority report, should actually put it on the floor.
Well, the chair's ruling, I don't think that matters. She's the committee chair. She's moving the committee report, which is denial based on a tie vote. I think it's an appropriate motion from Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Corporate Counsel. When there is a failed vote, the motion fails. And actually, what we're doing here is incorrect. It should be, and you can comment on that, Corporation Counsel, the motion for the committee had failed, so there was no action. So the action should be a motion if they so choose, to make a motion to approve. There is no motion on the floor. Corporate Counsel, I'd like you to answer that. Thank you.
Actually, I think the effect of the 3-3 tie is that it failed. So it failed, which to me, while it's, I mean, a move to not approve doesn't make any difference because it failed. So the conditions, well, no, it failed. So it wasn't granted. I think the motion now could be either you could even make a motion to approve of conditions or a motion to deny with conditions. I think either one is appropriate. So
I'll make that motion to approve with the 14 conditions.
Oh, there's a motion on it.
The chair is ruling there's a motion on the floor that was the committee report, which was to deny the conditional use permit, including the 14 conditions. That was moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. And that's the motion on the floor right now. I can't entertain another motion unless you're wanting to offer an amendment, which I think would further confuse the matter, but that's your preference. So the motion before us is moving the committee report, which is a denial of the request or the conditional use permit. Supervisor Pedretti, back to you.
Okay, thank you. However we get this through, I think as folks have read in the minutes, and I'm sure everybody's read them thoroughly, this was discussed in great depth. The 3-3 vote may have been the result of maybe some misunderstanding at the time. I believe the 14 conditions are very thorough, and I guess what we're trying to do is this motion should get voted down. So I would ask that you would vote no on the committee report. Thank you.
Supervisor Doyle.
Move to table the committee report.
Supervisor Doyle has moved to... Are you wanting to say table or are you wanting to postpone indefinitely? Supervisor Doyle moves to postpone indefinitely the PR&D committee report, seconded by Supervisor Geary. Supervisor Doyle, back to you. Do you want to explain why you're doing that? Postpone indefinitely. We can debate postponing indefinitely, can't we? That's one of the differences about tape.
I made that motion because I find Supervisor Pedretti very compelling in every argument that she makes, and she persuaded me.
So pardon?
It's debatable majority.
It is debatable, and it requires a majority vote. Supervisor Hampson.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of simple-minded. It seems to me it would be simpler to just vote this up or down? I'm not clear that postponing indefinitely is appropriate at this point.
It's going to take two votes.
Okay.
So
whatever.
So the motion in front of us now is to postpone indefinitely the committee's report, which was to deny. Supervisor Pedretti.
Well, then I guess I have a point of order. If we postpone indefinitely, can we still talk about conditional use permit 855? We can't. No, I think it kills it. If we vote to kill this report, we can't then talk about CUP 855.
Supervisor Burke.
Madam Chair, the maker of the motion may ask for a leave to withdraw her motion. Or we could amend that motion from denial to approval. That would be the simplest way when forgetting that postpone indefinitely.
Mr. Lang.
I don't think that's an amendment. I think a withdrawal can be done by the, as you know, by the whole body once it's been introduced by the body. So I think the whole body could say withdraw and maybe start over again. I think if someone wants to withdraw, because I think probably the best way would have been just go to move to approve the conditional use, and it'll get done what we need to do.
The motion that we have on the floor right now is to postpone indefinitely. That was moved by Doyle and seconded by Geary. So voting against that motion keeps our options open for this evening. Supervisor Richmond.
Madam Chair, Corporate Counsel, and Board, postpone indefinitely means you're going to kill it altogether. You have no date there to bring it to a committee. Postpone indefinitely, and everybody knows Robert's Rules. I have a couple books on that if you'd like one. But it means it's killing it indefinitely. That's it. It's done. And I think we need to withdraw that motion. Thank you.
Supervisor Doyle.
Well, a couple of points. One is I would ask Corp Counsel to further research your opinion with regard to how you handle a 3-3 tie. It may be different with zoning and conditional use issues because of the way statutorily, if the committee does nothing, that is in effect a denial within a certain amount of time. So I would agree with you for every other committee. I'm not sure I agree with you as it relates to items that come through zoning. So I just ask you to look further into that. Secondly, my motion to postpone indefinitely was to postpone the motion on the floor, which was the committee report. If my motion to postpone indefinitely passes, then Supervisor Pedretti can make a motion to approve the zoning request or the conditional use permit. It doesn't kill everything. It just kills the committee report to allow us to do what she tried to do 10 minutes ago.
Further discussion on the debatable motion to postpone indefinitely, and that motion is being made specifically on the committee report, which was to deny. On the computer, if you vote yes, if you want to postpone indefinitely the committee's report, which is denial of the conditional use permit, vote yes. Supervisor Pedretti.
I just want a clarification from legal counsel that is the case, that we don't pass this, and then I find out that I can't bring this up again. Because I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get this through. This is a struggle. Okay. I want to make sure we're doing the right thing, and by voting yes to postpone, we can still work on.
My opinion is that if we are only moving to postpone indefinitely
the report
of the committee that basically has the effect of denying the conditional use permit, denying or not approving it, that's the only thing that's being postponed indefinitely.
Is the report.
Because we have to make sure that we're not postponing the whole question. We're just postponing this motion, which is to approve the committee report, which kills the conditional, which says no conditional use. We have to be very careful that it's just that. And if we're just doing that, then I think we can still entertain a motion to approve it.
Okay. And that is the ruling of the chair as well.
I'm just being cautious because...
Absolutely. It does not preclude us from voting on the conditional use permit. It is postponing indefinitely the motion to approve the committee report, which was denial. So on the computer, yes, if you are in favor of postponing indefinitely the vote on the committee's report, which is the recommendation to deny. And then Supervisor Pedretti will be called upon again for another motion. On the computer, please.
All right. It's just consideration of the question.
Supervisor Ebert, will you cast a vote, please? The motion to postpone indefinitely has passed on a 23-5 vote. Supervisor Pedretti, you have the floor again.
Thank you. So now my motion would be to approve, correct? Conditional use permit number 855. Do I have to read it all again? With the 14 conditions.
Supervisor Pedretti has moved approval of conditional use permit number 855, seconded by Supervisor Ferries. Now discussion on the conditional use permit.
And again, if Supervisor I could retain the floor. I think we have some very solid conditions. There were some concerns, as you read in the minutes, with driveway access. I think they've been met with the conditions. I have talked to the town. They are very happy with the conditions. So I think that at the time, there was maybe some confusion. I believe we have what is here is a very good chance for a small business to get a start. And again, now I would ask for your approval. Thank you.
Other discussion on conditional use permit 855. Supervisor Geary.
I support the petition. The petitioners, I believe, are already in business, so they have a track record in complying with the health regulations and any other regulations that are included in the safeguards here. And lately I've been seeing a lot of ads on TV talking about jobs. Sometimes these small businesses turn into larger businesses. So I'm wholeheartedly in support of this rezoning.
Supervisor Holtz.
I was one of the no votes on committee. My biggest concern, and I still have that concern, is creating a commercial business in a residential neighborhood. Current zoning on the property is A1, which is large residential with coming from a farming nature, but it's a large residential. There are seven houses on the road, all residential. To my knowledge, no businesses. I was concerned about the easement. Not it isn't a road, it's an easement. Doesn't meet any town specs. Additional traffic, continue adding traffic, is going to become a maintenance problem somewhere along the line that's going to have to be addressed. And one of the conditions is to address it. I'm not sure that solves the problem. The biggest concern I have is the comprehensive plan that the town adopted and this county board adopted and also codified as Chapter 32 of our ordinances. It shows that future use to stay residential, not a commercial. That's my biggest problem. Thank you.
Other discussion? Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I think that's the beauty of a conditional use permit versus a rezoning request, is that they can make the exceptions for a specific business or whatever. Thank you.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would like to hear from the supervisor their recommendation for whoever the district, whosever district this is in.
Thankfully, that's the chair of the county board, and I'm not choosing to pass the gavel at this point, but I can certainly call on unless the group is wanting me to pass the gavel for that. Sitting in this chair, it makes it a little bit difficult.
To me, the folks who represented that person, that's who I want to hear from, not. So I guess, does that mean you can't pass the gavel? I don't understand.
I could, but I'm instead... I, I, pardon?
Is that
Supervisor Veenstra. I'm choosing not to enter into the debate.
Well, thank you for representing your constituents.
It's not the only way that you represent constituents is by participating in debate on the floor of the county board. Supervisor Geary.
The town of Shelby, did they approve this unanimously?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Supervisor Pedretti,
and did any of the neighbors there as legal objectors?
Either Supervisor Pedretti can answer this or staff. Charlie Handy is here, or it's in the minutes of the PR&D committee.
I'll let Charlie take it. Thank you.
I believe it says in the minutes, I don't think we had anybody come in opposition to this petition.
And one other point, in regards to the comprehensive plan, we were told we approved it, that we would be getting resolutions like this coming in the future, because it couldn't encompass every possibility throughout the county, and we would be, on occasion, doing something different than the comprehensive plan outline. I was told it wasn't set in stone.
Is there a question? The comprehensive plan is adopted with a recommendation that this be a residential district. The county board has, and the committee has in the past many times, approved conditional use permits within those areas that are shown as residential. So that has been your determination as a county board in the past, that a conditional use permit within a residential area is still consistent with the comprehensive plan. That's been your decision in the past. The other thing that we did, we added a condition in here that there be a home constructed within 24 months, which would be then the primary use, which would again create that consistency with the comprehensive plan.
Was that it for you, Supervisor Geary? Supervisor Doyle.
I'd just briefly like to speak as a person who operates a business in a residential area with a conditional use permit from the City of La Crosse. I have my law office on Ferry Street. The rest of the area is residential. It's actually multifamily for the most part, and it has worked very well. If you have a business that is not disruptive, it can actually be a benefit to the area, increasing values and so forth. And in fact, that was what I was told when the city approved my conditional use permit for my law practice. Mark Ranger, who owned the place 2 houses down, said my property value just went up. I mean, so it's not a harm necessarily to do a business in, and I don't think I would even call this a residential area when you've got 56 acres. I think it's much more than that. So I think it's a good idea, and I agree with the comment made earlier. You know, we're hearing a lot of talk about creating jobs. You know, this is the kind of thing that you start small, and maybe it'll turn into something big someday, and I think it's a good thing to do it. So I'm certainly in favor of it.
Other discussion? On the computer, if you're in favor of conditional use permit number 855, vote yes. If you're opposed, vote no. It worked one time. On a vote of 25 in favor, 3 opposed, conditional use permit 855 is approved. We took that item out of order. We are at a stopping point, and the photographer is here, so I'm going to ask that we go into recess to have our Supervisor Schrader moves to go into recess, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller, for purposes of taking the photograph and then coming right back because we have more fun ahead of us. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I request that we take item 519 and ask unanimous consent that it be moved to the agenda now.
Any objection to moving item 519 up in the agenda so that guests from the community can participate or can hear the outcome? Seeing no objection, we will take up item 519. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item number 519. to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors in regards to approval of extension of lease with Brennan Marine Incorporated for Hinchin Island Fleeting Site. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby approves the extension of the current lease agreement between Brennan Marine Incorporated and the County of La Crosse for a period of an additional 10 years from June 30, 2018 to June 30, 2028, on the same terms and conditions, conditioned upon Brennan Marine performing the dredging work referred in this referenced in this resolution at no cost to the city, county, or city of La Crosse. Be it further resolved that the county board chair is authorized to execute such an agreement after approval by Corporation Council. Fiscal note, La Crosse County currently receives $1,465.47 per month, which will be tied to the CPI each year for the term of the lease. I move for its approval and note that it was adopted by the executive committee immediately prior to this meeting.
Supervisor Hampson moves approval of Resolution 519, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That resolution is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Hampson.
Now I got to find my place. It's a problem taking things out of order. Then I have a mess on my desk. All right. Okay, I have item number 516, second consideration of an ordinance to amend section 3.07, paren 1 and paren 2 of chapter 3 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin regarding work hours. As per the wishes of the executive committee, I move to postpone this ordinance indefinitely, essentially killing it, in favor of a more flexible policy to be established at a later date, since this is considered internal policy, not ordinance material.
Supervisor Hampson has moved to postpone indefinitely passage of ordinance 104, section 3.07, paren 1 and paren 2 of chapter 3. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Holtz. Were you asking for the floor, Supervisor Hampson, or no?
No.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Discussion on postponing indefinitely. Supervisor Geary.
I heard him mention that they're going to develop some policy. Is that coming back in resolution form?
I'll take that. There's a note on your desk from the county board chair. It's in gray. And we apologize for not getting it to you sooner. But if you go down to the bottom of that note in the italicized bolded area, this is the type of language that we would be looking at. It is the policy of the County of La Crosse to establish and publicize normal hours of operation sufficient to meet the needs of the public. In order to carry out this policy, the county administrator shall work with county departments to establish and publicize such hours of operation. The county administrator shall report the hours of operation for county departments to the county board for review and approval initially and as often as directed by the county board. And as it said, this is suggested wording.
Supervisor Geary, can you turn your mic on, please?
Sorry, Madam Chair. The answer is yes. We're going to approve it initially, so a resolution will be coming through some committee. Is that the way I'm reading this?
Mr. Lang, if you could clarify, please.
We would just be amending it today, but because the ordinance you have before you is paren 1 and paren 2, and this takes care of the whole thing, including 3 and 4, it would be a new ordinance, and we would take it through next month for introduction.
Other discussion on the motion to postpone indefinitely? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item number 517, the second consideration of an ordinance to amend section 3.09 of chapter 3 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin regarding grievance procedures. I move for its approval.
Supervisor Hampson moves approval, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That ordinance is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. I have item number 518. To the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, in reference to the approval of amendment of declaration of restrictions for Meadow Park Estates addition in the village of Rockland. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby approves an amendment of the declaration of restrictions for the Meadow Park Estates addition in the village of Rockland, which allows for duplexes and other modifications to the restrictions in the Meadow Park Estates addition. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair is authorized to sign the amendment after approval by Corporation Counsel. Fiscal note, an expense of $30 to record amendment with the Register of Deeds. And there is much more detail attached to this, and I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Hampson, seconded by Supervisor Gamroth. Discussion. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did we get, was the letter, I didn't read without my glasses, the letter from the Village of Rockland is saying approval?
Brian Fukuda, if you'd be heard on this, please, and answer Supervisor Ebert's question.
The letter from the village actually states that they are not in favor of the amendment to the Declaration of Restrictions. And I did have a conversation with the village president in regards to that letter. She stated that basically they're not in favor of any restrictions, so they feel that this is a step in the right direction in lessening some of the restrictions, but they wouldn't support, because they can't fully support it because they don't support any restrictions at all. They feel that it should be left up to village zoning, which was not in place at the time that the original restrictions were recorded, but now village zoning, it should do its job.
And I guess I'd like to ask Supervisor Gamroth what her stance on this would be, please.
I spoke to Linda last night, the village president, and she understands the county's position on this. She just said that they prefer not having any restrictions, but she understands that they, with the covenant, they have to have something. And she knows that, as he said, this is a step in the right direction, that it will evolve as time goes on, and this is just a process. And she was very comfortable with it, and she said so was the board. We spoke at great length.
So, Supervisor Gamer, I'm assuming then that you are for supporting this.
Yes, I am.
Thank you much.
Other discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
Brian, as long as you're up there, then will you amend this, or can you amend this to allow more duplexes there than the ones that are already allowed?
The way the restrictions are, the way the amendment is currently written, it would allow for more duplexes. It would not allow for duplexes on any lot out there, but it would allow for duplexes specifically on the lots that are adjacent to Interstate 90. It would allow duplexes on corner lots, and then for other lots, it would allow duplexes, but they would have to be put on basically a ratio of 2 to 3. So you would have to purchase 3 lots to put 2 duplexes on, or if you just wanted to put one duplex up, you would have to do it on 2 lots. So more duplexes would be allowed, but not on any lot.
Supervisor Gamroth.
I drive out there about once a month. I drove out there again last night to look, and I really would implore everyone to drive out there and look at the development. It's unique. It's hard to explain. It's rough. It's very nice out there, and it's got a lot of potential, and I think it will do very well.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a technical definition for duplex? Is that just a two-unit building, or is that more than two-unit building?
It would just be two dwelling units.
Okay.
And that would be consistent with village zoning. So village zoning would allow for a one or two unit.
Okay, so structure. Three units or four units or six units is not acceptable.
Not acceptable at all. By covenants or by the village zoning at this point in that area.
Other discussion? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That resolution is approved. Is that it for you, Supervisor Hampson?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Burke, Judiciary and Law Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 5-20 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the approval of joint law enforcement agreement between La Crosse County and the counties of Winona and Houston, whereas Wisconsin statute Section 175.46 authorizes a border county to enter into a mutual assistance agreement with counties in an adjacent state to mutually provide law enforcement services between counties. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby approves joint law enforcement agreements between the La Crosse County Sheriff's Office and the Sheriff's Office of Houston County and Winona County in the state of Minnesota in accordance with this resolution and provisions of Wisconsin Statute Section 175.46. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair, County Administrator, and County Sheriff are authorized to execute such agreements after approval by Corporation Council. Fiscal note, no direct fiscal impact to La Crosse County. Each party shall be responsible for its own costs, equipment, and the action of its employees pursuant to the agreement. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Richmond. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That resolution is approved. Is that it for you, Supervisor Burke? Thank you very much. Just a reminder, the committee minutes checklist or request for copies of those hasn't made its way all the way through the room yet. If we can keep that moving, please, as we go back to Supervisor Pedretti for planning, resources, and development.
Let's have some more fun. Item number 5-21, conditional use permit number 854, filed by Thomas and Nancy Schomburg, acting on behalf of Octagon Farms and doing business as Schomburg Kennels, to amend conditional use permit number 726 to increase the maximum number of dogs from 45 to 60, to allow for one full-time employee in addition to family members, and to allow for Schomburg Kennels to operate on the west side of County Road YY on land zoned exclusive ag district in the town of Barrie. I move the committee report on a vote of 5-1 with 16 conditions and ask to hold the floor.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Weers. Back to you, Supervisor Pedretti.
I will note, if you've looked at the conditions, that this is actually conditions have changed. They are now asking not to increase the dog number. They're going to stay at 45. And that rather than one full-time employee, it is up to the equivalent of two full-time employees. And it was a two-night hearing. We had this last month at a hearing, and then we had it again this month. It was very in-depth discussion. And as you can see by the vote 5-1, our committee did approve it, so I would ask your support as well.
Thank Discussion. You. Supervisor Schrader.
You say they're willing to reduce the number down to, what was it?
40.
I think that ought to be, that's my opinion, that should be amended.
It's in the condition. They apply for this, if I may, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, thank you.
When they apply, they have to fill out the form, and this is what was filed. This is what was in the paper. This is how it was advertised. So that is how we have to look at the condition use permit. However, it's the conditions that are what apply. And if Charlie is still available, he can clarify that a bit better. Right, it's taken care of in the conditions, but we have to list it the way they filed it. Am I correct on that, Charlie?
That's correct. And the other point with that is the town of Barrie did a real nice job in reviewing it and gave us this as one of the conditions. So this is supporting the recommendation by the town of Barrie to keep it at 45.
Other discussion? Supervisor Hampson. Oh, yep. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back in my memory, this is the first zoning ordinance I recall that put to rest my idea that I could just ignore zoning because I didn't understand it. So this one came up. It was a very emotional discussion. There's been a lot of emotional things that have happened since. Animal control has been out there. Health department has been out there. Their license has been revoked. There's been a lot of upheaval. And I would just like to hear from Supervisor Jerome on her decision to vote no on this, if I may.
Supervisor Jerome, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Being new, of course, to this committee, I was concerned when I found out that they were operating on the west side of the road illegally against their conditional use permit.
Can you make sure you're speaking right into the microphone, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
So that was the first thing that, and then as I investigated and read through the and saw the pictures that were sent to me, I realized that they'd had a lot of problems out there from 2003 to this year with ventilation, sanitation, lighting, heating of the kennel area. And since the conditional use permit that we give them allows them to apply for their commercial animal established license, I feel that we need to take into consideration that they have not been in, they kind of have a habitual lack of compliance in these areas. So I didn't feel comfortable voting for it. I felt that some of the issues were not completely addressed. There are some lighting and heating issues on the east side of the road. Ideally, they would move all of their operations to the west side of the road. I just had general concerns about the entire, you know, history of it and the fact that they did lose their operating license and then upon inspections got it back and then had more citations. And it's just kind of been a roller coaster of noncompliance.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What happens if they lose their license? What happens to the animals? Would the county come in and take control of them, or what happens then?
I think that would have to be answered by our health department. I would assume that they would require the landowners to get rid of them, but I don't know how they would get rid of them. It's the permit holders that would need to do that, and their process is really up to them how to get rid of them.
Let's see if Mr. Lang can shed any more light, please.
I would only say I'm sure the Humane Society would be involved, but I'm not exactly sure how that would work.
Supervisor Weers.
thank you. I just want to point out that there were a few, it was very heated debate, but there was also a vet. Their vet was there vouching for them. We took the trip out there, and we could see for ourselves what the dogs live like. And I just want to remind people that if this weren't approved, it's not that they have to quit doing business and quit having their 45 dogs. They would still be able to have them just on one side of the road. And we're actually saying the west side of the road is very appropriate. The health department said it. Everybody has said it. So it would actually not eliminate it. It would just eliminate the dogs from being able to be moved to the best side of the road. So I just want to remind everybody of that.
Supervisor Holtz.
I voted yes in the committee on this. I think, did they make some mistakes? Yes. They started doing it on the west side of the road without getting the condition permit changed. That was wrong. They have had problems in the past. It looked to me when we were out there and toured the place that they've done a remarkable job of cleaning it up. I mean, maybe there were citations in the past. I read the reports from the Humane Society and the health department lady that was there. And even she said, as I asked her, she said that, yeah, the lighting isn't right. I said, is it something that has to be fixed? Well, not really. I mean, so they're complying. Her desire to move it across the street is just her desire to move everything across the street. I saw the kennels on the other side of the street. I didn't see a major problem with most of them. Granted, we didn't go inside the buildings, but the runs looked well maintained. They were done properly. They had all the wires up, and they kept the dogs separated. And so I think that, yeah, there were mistakes made, And I think the committee will keep an eye on it, and so will the department heads. And if we have another problem, we'll revisit it. But at this point, I would recommend that we allow them to use the West Side facility, which is a much better facility than what they have on the East. Thank you.
Supervisor Doyle, did you have your hand up? Supervisor Veenstra.
I just wanted to echo what Supervisor Holtz just said. And with regard to the conditions, the 15th one is if there's a problem, it's coming right back. So, I mean, I guess I give the people a chance. It seems like they're trying to actually improve the operation, and they're doing a good thing, you know, if they can do that. And if there is a continued problem, then it'll get yanked.
Anyone else who wishes to be heard for the first time? I'm sorry I didn't see all hands up. Supervisor Jerome, back to you.
I agree. I would like to see this kennel succeed. We did not get a tour of the east side of the road. We did not get a tour of the problem kennels that were. We went into an upper barn. We did not go lower underneath where the problem kennels are. I would like to see them stay on the west side of the road, which is a better facility. I just am concerned about the east side, the part that we did not get a tour of. And if possible, it would be nice to have them stop using the east side, which is not as healthy for the dogs, and it's not a good kennel situation. Thank you.
Supervisor Doyle.
Can somebody clarify what turned out to be or what may be the final position of the Humane Society on this? I mean, I read Amy Gabrilska's comments in here, and she was appearing in opposition. She made some comments about, you know, would like to see them succeed. I mean, what really was their position? Do they not want any facility there? Do they want it to have to move to the other side, or they just don't want it expanded? I mean, can anybody clarify?
We'll ask Mr. Handy
at the end
to
of the day where they came down.
It should be, and if it's not, we need to correct it very clear in the minutes that the Humane Society is acting in behalf of the County Health Department. They are a contracted inspection service, so the Humane Society does not take a position on this specific instance as far as for or against. Their report is really for informational purposes to the committee as far as...
Not what your minutes say.
Right, we should fix that. As far as they're doing the inspections. And... They showed the violations. They showed that the license was revoked, but that it has been reissued. And so the health department wants to make sure that we know what the issues are out on the site. But as far as taking a position in favor or in opposition, she was in opposition of a couple of situations as their inspector. One was the facilities on the east side of the road that had no they basically were completely walled in. That she was opposed to that specific instance, but everything else in the permit she was not opposed to.
Supervisor Doyle, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it does, and I agree. The minutes didn't leave me with that impression. Thank you.
Supervisor Weers.
Thank you. I just want to point out that the west side of the road, the east side of the road, we were invited to look down in the basement where Supervisor Jerome is talking about. We chose not to, but when we were on the east side, we were in a barn type facility with these huge kind of horse like kennels that had puppies in them. I mean, there was plenty of room. There was bedding. There was it was not. The west side has been okay for the full time that they've been running their business. And they have the vet and several of their, I guess you'd say, customers who purchase these puppies there to say what great health they're in when they're there, and we saw that. The east side of the road, I'm sorry, is I would just recommend that we don't think about making them move out of there, because they do have some great facilities that they're using, and they wouldn't be able to use those then, like the barn that they're using to keep puppies in. So.
Any other discussion? So the motion before us is to approve the committee report, which is to approve with the, I'm sorry, number of conditions, 16 conditions. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Pedretti.
Item number 5-22, zoning petition number 1890 to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Francis Weedham to rezone from exclusive ag district to agricultural district A, 29.56 acres for continued residential use of one single family residence in the town of Farmington. I move the committee report, which was approved 6-0, with two restrictions.
Supervisor Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Paff. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved.
Wow, that was fun. Item number 5-24, zoning petition number 1895 to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Carmen Liebolt, acting on behalf of Oscar and Connie Liebolt, Revocable Trust, to rezone from exclusive ag district to ag district A, a pending 4.27 acres in the town of Burns. I move the committee report, which was approved 6-0 with two restrictions.
Supervisor Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved.
We're moving right along. Item number 5-25, zoning petition number 1896 to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Julie Fernholz, acting on behalf of Federal National Mortgage Association, to rezone from Transitional Ag District to Residential District A, a 2.26-acre parcel for continued residential use on the following described lands in the town of Shelby. I move the committee report, which was approved 6-0 with two restrictions.
Supervisor Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve with two conditions, seconded by Supervisor Holtz. Discussion on this item. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved.
Item number 5-26, zoning petition number 1897 to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Craig Reedy, acting on behalf of Larry Donald Gloria Bonnie Gensch, to rezone from Residential District C to Residential District A parcel for a proposed single-family residence, and to rezone from Exclusive Ag District to Residential District Ag to add additional area for residential use. The following describes land, described land in the town of Hamilton. I move the committee report, approved 6-0 with two restrictions.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti to approve the committee report, seconded by Supervisor Weers. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved as well.
Item number 5-27, zoning petition number 1898 to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Timothy and Julie Lysacker to rezone from Transitional Ag District to Commercial District B, a 14.35-acre parcel for placement of billboards on an existing billboard, the following described land in the town of Holland. I move the committee report, which was approved 6-0.
Supervisor Pedretti moves the committee report to approve, seconded by Supervisor Holtz. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved. Is that it for you, Supervisor Pedretti?
That is, and I thank the county board for their patience.
Thank you very much. Suggestions for future agenda items. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like you to refer back to the discussion we had on the ordinance change on work hours and ask that the chair convene an ad hoc committee to review chapters 1-4 of the County Code of Ordinances. We've dinked around with little bits here and there, and I think it's time we just had a good solid look at those first four chapters and update them. Thank you.
Other suggested future agenda items. Reminder that your green bio sheets for the website should be turned in to Ginny Dankmeyer, the clerk, tonight, please. And did we get the committee minutes sign-up sheet all the way through the room? Supervisor Richmond, did you see that yet? Yes? Everybody. Just make sure you've signed, you've indicated your preference for getting paper copies of those minutes before you leave tonight. Last call for future agenda items. If not, I would call on Supervisor Brockmiller. Supervisor Brockmiller makes a motion to adjourn, seconded by Supervisor Burke. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One, no. Supervisor Schrader, was that a no from you? Oh, my mistake. I thought I heard a no over there. We are adjourned with the thanks of the chair.